We had crazy weather last night. Did you
guys get hail? I saw some people talking about getting hail in the Midwest.
If we did, I didn't see it. It was just really, like, lots of lightning and thunder. And
well, David, Derek Bieri from Vice Grip Garage posted that Tennessee was expecting a hailstorm, and he was nervous about his car collection is going to get beat up because his cars are outside. And he says, well, I'm bracing for the worst. But that was 9 hours ago. I just noticed that post this morning, so I was wondering what actually did happen. So you must have gotten an edge of it.
Yeah, it kind of went – it was weird. It's this big swirl of storms that came through St. Louis and then in Tennessee and went around us. And we got some of it, but it mostly, like, passed – it was pretty wild. But yesterday, they sent all the kids home from school an hour early. They canceled all the – sporting and church events at night and, like,
tornadoes?
Everything. Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
And then it was nothing for a long time, and then last night while we were trying to go to sleep, it was just, like, whipped into a frenzy. It was crazy, but we're all good here.
There's been a lot of weather
As you
events.
Said that, thunder just... Thunder's thundering out right now. But yeah, we didn't get any of that yesterday.
Oh, that's good.
We were supposed to have bad weather all week, and we keep getting these windows of sun, which is nice, because I was able to work on my stool outside.
Yeah, it's this time of year. It's just, at least here, thunderstorms all the time. They pop up, and they can be pretty bad. This is tornado season for us, but luckily we're good. What have you guys been up to? What's going on?
Well, I told you guys I would do a PSA. I'll do a quick PSA about taking care of your pets, because yesterday we were going to start the show. This is Thursday morning now, and most people know we record Wednesday morning. But I was preparing a coffee about 20 minutes before we got started. We were set to start, and I was playing, and my cat came up, and I started petting her, and I realized she had a big hairball, like, stuck in her fur. I have five cats, and of the five cats, four of them are long hair, so I'm constantly contending with shaving tree burrs out of them and whatever they pick up out in the yard. And so I went to snip this big ball of fur out of a neck that was matted, and I snipped and snipped with a pair of scissors, and I looked back, and I had snipped more than the fur, and I started panicking because she didn't seem to panic, but I panicked, and I had put a nice big cut in her skin. And that's when I texted you guys. I said, guys, I'm in trouble, I gotta figure this out. And you said, well, let's just put it off. Called the vet and brought my cat in, and they shaved it down properly so that she's not matted, but they also gave her about 20 stitches to the cut that I put in her neck with a pair of scissors. So she didn't seem to mind. Obviously, it was needed attention, but there was no bleeding. It was just the surface of the skin, but it definitely needed to be stitched shut. So, PSA, don't go near your cats with scissors. I won't do it anymore. I always thought I was good at it, and I've talked a little bit about it on YouTube. I mean, on Instagram, because a lot of people are curious about my cats. But from now on, I'll just go at it with the buzzer. But she's okay. She's back now, and I just let her outside for the first time. And I spent a lot of money to get it fixed. And so it's funny. It's like I opened the door to the kitchen. I'm like, good luck. Don't make me waste my money. You better come back.
Yeah.
You know, every time you let an outdoor cat out, you're just like, this might be the last time. Nice knowing you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just spent $700-$800 on getting it fixed and cleaned up. And she hadn't been to the doctor in a while, so she needed everything. Vet, rabies
and
all that. Yeah, oil change. And
the routine maintenance.
All the filters, yeah. Last time she was at the doctor was in the city, so that was a long time ago. Anyway, everything's back on track.
Good. What? I'm glad to hear that. Do you have a lot of foxes up there?
Yes, there's foxes and coyotes quite a bit. Mm. You hear the coyotes all the time. I'm always showing them on Instagram when you hear them, like, hooting and hollering out in the woods. But I see foxes cross the street a lot. The foxes, though, don't ever necessarily bother me, and they don't seem to get in the coop. I did have a coop massacre last March, a year ago March, and I lost about 7 or 8 birds in one night. But I don't know to what. A lot of people have different opinions about what. They're like, a couple of the birds were only missing their heads, and a few guys are like, that's definitely a Fisher cat, which I've never ever heard here or seen here. And I love a couple of the other neighbors are like, definitely a raccoon. I've never seen a raccoon on my property. They're here, but I've never seen one here. So I don't know what did it. A couple of the birds were left with just no heads, which is kind of
Northeastern head eater, probably, is what I would say.
That's, yeah, the eastern, northeastern head eater, probably. But there's no clues. Like, I have no idea. I don't have a camera set up in the coop, so how would I know? But that was because I left the door open.
Well, we have a lot of foxes here in our neighborhood. And then there's, I know there's coyotes in the area too that come, they have come into the neighborhood before, but none of our animals are outside animals. Our next door neighbor has this cat, who's named Boat. I don't know why there's a cat named Boat, but there's a cat named Boat. And it's an outdoor cat, but it's like the neighborhood cat. It's their cat, but it sleeps in other people's houses and stuff. And like, it's really wild. But I keep expecting to find parts of this cat all over the place because he's constantly outside and there are constantly larger, more aggressive animals like coming through, you know, all the streets and stuff.
Yeah.
It would drive me crazy to have like an outdoor animal and just like, yeah, like you're saying, I hope I see you again.
Yeah. There are times where like a whole day, maybe a day and a half will go by and I'm like, well, I guess we lost Rex. And then all of a sudden, he just like shows up at a window while I'm watching TV. I'm like, oh, hey, come on in.
You know, it's wild.
But, you know, it's life on the farm. So that was my thing. So, guys, thanks for pushing it till today. But sure. Besides that, I've been making stuff. I've been making my leather, not my walnut stool. I was going to say leather stool. But I made my walnut stool, which I'm really happy with. You could tell when I'm happy, people say, because you always post a lot about it. But and, Bob, by the way, how did your vote go? I'm sure nobody was overly concerned whether they see it. Everyone wants to see it.
No, there was actually a lot of feedback on that. Go ahead and finish what you're saying.
Because when you did that, I you know, that's what I always do. I'm always happy to show what I'm working on because, and we've talked about this in the past. I'll only get 10,000 views on Instagram, and you hope to get, you know, 100,000 on YouTube or more. So it's just a small smattering of people are not going to not watch it because they've seen the net result. So I ended up getting the stool basically done. Today I'm going to give it a couple of more coats of a finish, sand it in between some coats, and then attach the seat to the legs. Came out kind of chunky. It looks a little overweight, but I kind of like it. I thought I was going to take a lot more weight off of it with the grinders and the sanders. But I got to a point where it looks like not prehistoric, but like kind of tribal. It has like a nice, interesting...
Primal,
that's the word I'm looking for. It has a kind of like a primal feel to it. I left it really thick and chunky, and the top seat was really thick. And I said on my Patreon, I was like, I'm going to put a graphic in it. I have to because it's a client piece. If I don't succeed and I need to redo it, I have the seat's almost 2 inches, 2.5 inches thick. I can just grind out the engraving and then try again. And what the first one was successful, so that worked out good. So I got a chance to leave the seat nice and chunky. And I'm happy with it. I put up a reel last night just showing the final results. I'll put up a reel eventually of like the quick process of how I got there. But Sam Maloof style, and you know, somebody asked me, did Sam Maloof make a stool? I was like, no, I mean, I'm just inspired by him. I'm not trying to copy or emulate anything he actually did. I don't know if he did make a stool. I'm not aware of it. So it's just a nod to the inspiration, really. I wanted a sculpted stool, and I'll talk a little bit later about the process of getting the framework and digging into the material. But yeah, I'm happy with that. And then I'm working on a bar cart for Johnny Walker. And this is interesting. Every time I do a project for the liquor companies, I always learn something new. So this time there has to be two taps. It's for a golf outing, and there's two particular drinks that people like to drink, and then there's going to be a little cooler in it with some ice. And so I have to, for the first time ever, make a tap system with a CO2 canister and 2 5-gallon tanks to hold liquor, pressurized system with taps and all that. So those guys sent me to a website called Beverage Elements. And I bought everything I need on Beverage Elements. So it's a learning process for me. It's going to be interesting to figure out how to connect that. I never knew how a tap system works that you would see at a bar. But this is going to be a standalone system, no electric involved. It's just a CO2 pressure tank. And then you have the 5-gallon tank, which you put the liquor or beer in, whatever you put in it. And the CO2 tank pressurizes that. And there's gauges and hoses and taps and stuff. So I'm excited to figure all that out. It's all coming in the mail probably today. So cool. I have to install that into this card I made, and at the same time give it a beautiful finish, which makes me nervous. Perfect paint job. It involves the color yellow, so I have to color some of the elements with proper paint and some of the elements with like a polyurethane or a varnish. It's a combination of white oak and these yellow elements, which could either be metal or just really clean painted MDF, which is probably the direction I'm going to go. So cool. I'm working on that. So everything's a new challenge.
Nice. David, what have you been up to?
So no filming this week, but I did start my acoustic guitar build, something I've been wanting to do for years.
Oh, that's really cool. That's what I missed when I tuned in.
And it always has just looked crazy complicated. And a year or so ago, I tried to get a one-on-one. There's a school about 45 minutes away. They teach acoustic guitar making, but you're in a class and you use all the pre-made jigs. And I contacted the teacher and said, "Hey, can we do a one-on-one?" And he said yes. And then conversation just stopped. So apparently he didn't want to do a one-on-one. And so I found a course online by this guy named Eric Schaefer. And so now I just finished the bending jig. And that's where I'm at. This one's not for a video, since I'm actually learning from an online course. And I don't know. It's one of those, it's a build that I've been kind of scared to do because it just looks complicated.
That's cool. I'm sure it is complicated.
Yeah.
The thought of making an acoustic guitar to me is like, that's just something I'm never going to do.
I took some shortcuts to make it a little bit easier. So Stumac, I bought the plans for it from there. Even though I'm taking this course, the course still recommends you get the plans, which is actually a big sheet of paper with a full-size actual guitar on there. And then I bought wood kits. So you buy a kit for the top and the back. You buy a kit for the sides.
What type of wood is it?
What's that?
What is the wood?
The top of it is spruce. And then the sides and the back of mine are walnut.
Oh, wow.
But spruce is the common top for acoustic guitars.
Is that like, would that be considered the soundboard?
Yes. Yeah. So... I have no idea how long it's going to take me because it's just for fun. So I'm just going to take my time and try to do it right the first time. Although I'm going to keep my expectations low.
But when you see guys make great guitars out of a cigar box or a shovel, you know you're going to get some results. You'll get some.
I've got a book, and I've
especially
been wanting
when you concentrate.
Do this for a while. But I got a book. It's I don't remember what it's called. Oh, Box Maker's Guitar. Here it is, right here. But it's like it's a book on how to make a acoustic guitar, but like stupid simple. So it's a box, so there's no bends. And I thought I was going to do this and try to make a video out of that, but I'm going all in and doing a regular old acoustic guitar.
That's cool. Okay, I'm not trying to change your mind. I'm not trying to convince you of anything. I'm just bringing up a discussion point, okay? Be clear about that. So you said you don't want to make a video about this because you bought a course and because, you know, somebody else is teaching the thing. So I get that you don't want to reteach. But that's kind of what we all do, is we learn parts of skills from other people and we assemble. I mean, everybody does this. You assemble knowledge from different places. And then you can consolidate that down into a very specific presentation that's about the thing that you are making. Is that your justification for doing it? Is that it's someone else's like effort in creating the course, or is it just not something you're interested in trying to make a video about?
So I take in a lot of information and skills from lots of courses and books and YouTubes. But I'm usually, like when I make a video, I'm only pulling in little bits and pieces. Or it's like common knowledge and woodworking, there's many ways to do a particular thing. And acoustic guitar making, there's probably many ways to do this. But I'm following somebody else's step by step. It's a long process of like, this is an actual thing I'm learning from somebody else. And so it wouldn't feel fair to this person. Where if somebody shows me how to cut dovetails and I use dovetails in the making of a dresser, I'm okay with, you know, with showing that. But this is somebody else step by step, beginning to end.
You're afraid it feels a little like plagiarism a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And so I am filming little bits of it for Patreon. And I suppose in the back of my head, I'm going to have all this footage. And I'm like, I could do like classic dress the style and maybe just do a compilation when I'm all done, or use the footage to tell a story but not actually teach how to make an acoustic guitar. Maybe it'll inspire somebody.
That's kind
like,
of where I was headed more than
maybe that looks easier than I thought. Maybe I'll take that course too, so we'll see.
I'm thinking it's more like a vlog almost in a way. It's like I'm taking this course from Joe Smith and this is what I learned from Joe Smith, and Joe Smith doesn't have a YouTube video, maybe he doesn't have an audience like you, and you could open him up.
Yeah, so we'll see. Mm-hmm. I'm going to collect the footage, and we'll see what happens. It's funny you mentioned
that is an interesting...
vlog.
Go ahead.
It's funny Jimmy mentioned vlog, because I've been really toying with the idea of doing more just kind of like talking how I feel about a certain thing. Just because I can't make something new every single week or every 2 weeks. It's a lot of pressure. And these last 2 weeks, I haven't filmed anything. And I've just kind of enjoying the time off, the time to fix things in the shop. And I'm like, how can I make videos that somebody will still get value out of without forcing myself to come up with something new every single week? And so I've been toying with the idea of vlogs in my head, but I don't know if I can. The trick is, in our space, they don't work very well. So what can I do to make that work well?
Yeah,
that's a hard question, because I've thought about that. I mean, a lot of people have attempted that in our space to add some like breathing room into their schedules and into just the creative process and stuff. And it is a hard thing, especially when you've created an audience expectation that this is the thing I do. You know, I make these things, or I run at this pace, or I whatever. And then when you try to deviate from that, there's either it's a really long, tough slog, or it's a hard break of now I do these two things instead of this one thing or whatever. And you know, it's just a hard transition. We've all tried stuff like that before. So. But I'm with you. Like the weekly, biweekly, coming up with another idea, getting the necessary knowledge you need and the stuff you need to be able to like do it and get it done in time, and like it's tiring.
And it's not only tiring. I don't want to reach that point of burnout. I don't like. I love making stuff. It's all I want to do all the time. And I want to make sure that feeling doesn't go away. So it's like, you know, if you like Snickers bars, you don't eat a Snickers bar every single day. Otherwise, you wouldn't. It would lose its.
Fuck yeah.
I would.
But yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yep. So jumping back real quick, we skipped over this. Let's see, project video from the course was a question. Oh, yeah. So Jimmy was asking earlier how my Instagram poll went. So a couple days ago, I was looking at Instagram, going through the stories, and I don't think she listens, and I don't think she'll care. So I'm going to just bring up my example. I was watching April's stories, April Wolferson. She's currently doing... she's building like a loft inside of her house in her living room. It's this really big project. And she had a bunch of stories within like a 2 day period of a lot of what they were doing, how they were building this like temporary scaffolding to put up a loft floor, and then, you know, creating LVLs to like it, just this whole thing. And they were showing it all in stories. And then I was watching that and I was interested in it. But then I switched gears and was doing something else. And I went back to thinking about, if I see enough of what she's doing, I wonder if I will be motivated or what she's planning on leaving out to make me motivated to watch the full YouTube video. And not everybody has the same endpoint, right? So I know that some people, Instagram is like, that's the endpoint for us. And I think for her, maybe not, can't speak for her, YouTube is one of a bigger endpoint than Instagram. In my mind, it is. And so I was just, I put up a little poll, a little, you know, I was asking people what they thought. If you see a whole bunch of detail about a project on Instagram or somewhere else, then are you still motivated to watch a full video if you've basically seen, we've gotten all the meat that you need to get from that project idea? Or if you've already seen the reveal, or if you've already whatever. And so I put up a poll thinking, choose one of these two options and that'll be my result. And I can't find that because Instagram, I don't know where to find those results anymore. They keep changing stuff. But I got a whole bunch of messages in addition to people pushing one of the two buttons. So most of the messages were, most of them were, I'm more interested in the process than the final result. And so I will watch both videos because I care about the details that you're talking about in the two different scenarios. Because, you know, you talk in like a story, you're talking about it in a different way, at a different depth than you would in an edited, prepared video. And so the majority of the response was, I care more about the process than the beauty shots. And so I want to see as much as possible about the idea. The second most, you know, common response was, you know, and they mentioned you guys a lot. I like you guys. I like what you do. I don't care if I've seen the project. I don't care if the project is something that I'm actually going to do or I'm that interested. I want to see you all do a thing. So I'm going to watch as much of it as I can in both places. And that was really nice. There were definitely some that said, I like to see behind the scenes stuff, but maybe don't show the end result on Instagram so that I'm still motivated to go see how it turned out. And then there were really just a couple, like one or two people that said, if I see enough of it, then I'm not going to go watch the video. So it was, I was expecting more of that. I was expecting more of, if I see enough, then I'm good. You know, I don't need to go watch a full video. And that was not the response. A lot of people mentioned how, Jimmy, how you show a lot of progress, you know, with like your leather projects and even with the stool. Somebody mentioned the stool and they were like, I'm still going to go watch it because I love Jimmy and I want to go see what he's doing. Nice. So, you know, so it's kind of interesting to get that feedback from people because I like to hide things that so people don't typically even know what I'm doing. And then all of a sudden it's like, poof, look what I made here. Are you curious how this got made? Then you can watch the video. But I realized that I don't know how to say it.
That's your jam.
Like love languages. Like you feel loved by being loved a certain way, but that's not necessarily the way that you love other people. I like to take content in that way to be surprised. Like, whoa, where did that thing come from? How did that happen? I want to know. More than like somebody, here's what I'm doing. Here's the little bit of this.
This might be a stretch, but
I realize, you know, that I'm not everybody else.
This might be a little bit of a stretch, but you. You're very into the stories, for like the sci-fi stories, for example. You know, you talk about it's part of your world. It's the sci-fi story and the excitement of getting to the end of the story. And so that could be a little bit of a translated thing where you want to show the story you just wrote. You don't want to be giving up the story as you're working on it. So it's more more of like an illustrated novel, so to speak. If you're writing an illustrated novel, you wouldn't necessarily want to keep talking about all the elements of it while you're working on it until it's done. And you're like, here's, I'm finished my edit, my story, all my stuff is written and composed. Here it is. Take a look. With me, I get very excited. If you see me posting a lot, it's because I'm excited about the process, because I'm having all these little mental discoveries as I work on them, because I'm like, oh, wow, that worked. And then I grab my phone. I'm like, look what I just did, and it worked. Well, look what if I did this, this happens, you know, and then I go, if you do this, this happens. But what really happened behind the scenes was like, oh, wow, I did that and that happened? And then I go, well, if you do this, this will happen. So I sound like I'm really smart. So that's why I'm always posting a lot of stories.
Well, I think there's a couple things about me, like you bring up the story thing. One, I realized a long time ago that I love a good before and after. I love a good, this is how you started, and this is where it got to. Just a really binary, right next to each other, start-finish thing. And the stuff in between, it doesn't show the full story. It doesn't show the full transformation. It doesn't show the original thing you're starting from either. So I really like that. Like I noticed when I was a kid, I mean, as an adult, I thought back when I was a kid, I would take pictures of my room. I used to rearrange my room all the time. And, like, I'd change all the furniture, and I'd, like, you know, put a desk on top of two other desks so I'd have a high desk so I could, I don't know, I did all this weird stuff.
High desk.
But I would take pictures of the room before I changed anything. I don't know why, but I would take a picture of it, and then I would get that developed, and then later on I would be able to, like, hold it up next to the actual room and be like, look how different this is.
What do you mean by that?
Get it developed, yeah. So there's that, and then I had another thought. Man, I don't remember what it was. But, so I think that's a big thing for me, and there's no right or wrong way to do this. I thought it was just an interesting comparison between how people use, you know, social media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I remembered, we've talked about this before. In fact, this was going to be a whole topic, but one of the reasons I don't really like to show something mid-project in progress is because I kind of don't want people's input until it's finished.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Hmm. Like, you get something halfway done, they're like, oh, that's going to look great if you paint it red. I'm like, I'm not going to paint it red. Why in the world would I paint it red? You know, I don't want that kind of, like, insertion into the plan that I have, usually. Yeah, you know, from the general public. So, that's part of it, too. But, anyway. So, I have been working on the clean room, the whatever you want to call it, the room that I built in the shop.
You know what I want to
call
it.
Yeah. And I got the printers all moved in yesterday, and I got that giant printer put together.
Yeah.
It is so big.
I see you're printing a little boat.
Yeah, the boat is this big. It was like the test print that was already loaded onto the USB.
Sure.
You know, so I was just like, hit the button just to make sure it worked. And it is, the printer is so big that I got it together and got it pushed in the room, in the corner and everything, and kind of stood back from it. And I was just like, I don't know if this is going to stay here. I don't know why I have this. I'm not really sure what I was thinking. It takes up a lot of room. It's like a tent. It's like a two person tent is how big it is.
Man,
yeah,
rope it up.
It's
rope it to the ceiling. Put it on the rope and pull it out.
I was
going to
say doghouse, but it sounds way bigger than a doghouse.
It is bigger than a doghouse.
What is the XYZ?
It is, well, it's a meter cubed.
Oh, okay.
On the outside.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. The build volume is not that big, but yeah, it's, anyway, it's wild. I do have some plans for it. I thought of some good ideas that I think will make, that'll take advantage of the size. Not necessarily you couldn't do it another way, but it'll just make it simpler to have something that big. So we'll see. But I've been, you know, I got all the printers in there now. Today I'm moving in my electronics desk and going to try to get that set up. And then it's immediately moving on to, like, making it look like I want it to look. So I've got a interesting idea that I hope works for adding lighting to it in a way that's kind of dynamic and sci-fi looking. So we'll see. Next week is going to be a lot of soldering and a lot of programming and a lot of, let's hope this works, you know. So,
ooh, let's do a live stream of the
really
programming.
Cool. Oh, yeah, that would be, no, that would exciting. Be terrible. But the room itself is interesting, and the change that side, you know, like I redid the wood shop, I compressed it down and got it smaller, and now it's a complete mess because I built the room next to it. It's really clean and organized and minimal right now. So we have these two spaces that are becoming more of what I want them to be. And then you have, like, if you're standing there looking at those two spaces, behind you is everything else. And it's just all the stuff I pulled out of there that I had to move out of the way, stuff that's going to be donated or thrown away or gone through or whatever. It's just this mass of just work. It's not even interesting. It's just a lot to do. It's a lot to go through. And so it's kind of a weird spot to be where I turn one direction. I'm like, oh man, this looks really cool. And I turn around, literally standing from the same spot. I'm like, ugh, there's so much to do, and it's so hard to find anything, and it's so hard to, you know, to kind of picture how it's going to get culled and organized and stuff.
Yeah,
it's kind of a weird spot to be in, but it's just going to be a lot of, you know, digging in. I think what I'm going to have to do is, and this kind of goes back to what you're saying, David, about like the coming up with ideas, I think I'm going to have to finish up the room and finish up the next project, or maybe even two, and then just kind of turn to face that mess and say, we're going to work on this until it's out of the way. Because there comes a point, and my office is like this right now too, but there comes a point where things get so overrun and so disorganized that they actually make it harder to be creative. And my office is absolutely like that. And the shop is beginning to be like that too. So it's going to, you know, it would be worth the effort, I think, to really dig in and clean it out. So that's in my future.
So, Bob, when we came to your shop a few years ago, when you walk in from the driveway, you walk past your office, which would be on the left. It's the family room first, then your office on the left, and then it opens up into the shop. Now, could you describe what that space looks like now? You split that
in half? Yeah, so if you're standing in that doorway, you walk right in. To your left, immediate left, is the wood shop. Like, the table saw is still in the same place where it was, right. So the wood shop is right there.
Okay.
The back corner to your left in front of you is now a room. And then
that's the room
everything
you sent the picture
to your... Yeah, yeah. And then everything to your right is a giant mess.
So the room you made, like, takes up a corner of the overall space. I thought it would be split completely in half.
No, it's about a quarter of the
space. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's why I wanted you to describe it, because I'm picturing the right half. That's kind of, isn't that where, like, the Bridgeport is and stuff along that wall?
Yeah,
I figured that whole wall was just inside that room.
No, it's the opposite end of the shop. So it's cool. Like, I'm really happy. I think it was the right choice, and I'm really happy with how the stuff is moving forward. But it is one of those things where, you know, you have to break a lot of eggs to make the thing that you want to make. So there's just going to be a digging out period, I think.
That's what keeps me from doing a lot of things, is that uncomfortable moment. We'll talk a little bit about it in the concept of the conversation, but that idea of, like, knowing it needs attention, and then I just ignore it, and it gets worse, and I ignore it, and then it gets even more worse.
Yeah.
Because the idea of breaking those eggs and just dealing with that, I have a lot of those.
You know, we've talked about this a lot of times. It's one of those things where, and maybe this can lead into our topic, it's one of those things where you have this task. I do this all the time. You have this task that you think, I have to do this before XXXX, whatever, before all these things can happen. I have this task, but I can't do it right now because I don't quite have the time, or I'm missing that one thing, or I, you know, if I start there, I'm not going to be able to finish today. Or so you have this thing, and then, like, I always picture it as I take that thing and I set it on my shoulder, and it's here, and it's, like, in my way and annoying and heavy. It's so I don't forget it. It's right there, and then I don't do anything about it. And the longer it sits there, the bigger it gets, and the more I think, man, that's going to take so much time. It's going to be so hard, and I don't have all the things. And then eventually, when you finally pull that thing off your shoulder and you go to do it, it takes 5 minutes, and it was easy, and it's over with. But you've carried around this extra mental weight about this undone hard thing, and it's made everything else hard in the meantime. I do that all the time.
And you would think... you would learn a lesson, and it would apply that to the next thing, but it doesn't happen that way.
Yeah. So there's got to be some sort of a trigger where you know, that you can give yourself to be like, nope, I'm going to do it right now.
Yeah.
I'm just going to get it over with. I'm going to do it. Jump through it. You know.
The trick for me is, like, it just needs to go on today's to-do list or the calendar. If it's written somewhere, somehow it makes it real.
Yeah, I could see that.
I have a couple of to-do lists. I have, like, oh, today I gotta, you know, I gotta go pick up some stuff, or we're gonna shoot this, and then I have another to-do lists that I just call looming. Things that are just on my shoulders.
Looming.
Yeah. And that just need to get done. Like, I have a roll of film that I need to develop that my mom found. That's on my list of looming things. Oh, and like, I gotta change the planer blades. Like, I've known for weeks that I've had to do these things. Now they're on a list, and I can see that reminder list every day.
So I built myself a to-do list recently in Notion. I don't know if we've talked about this or not, but in trying to handle this type of stuff and prioritize the tasks that are, some are immediate, some are long-term, I built this list, and I think it's still going to continue to change, but I gave everything a priority. And so the then I can look at it in stacks of priority, which is really handy. So I have an urgent one, which means like it's the thing that I should be doing right now. There should never be anything on that list for more than a day. And then I have things that don't have a priority that just end up like, I don't want to forget about them, but they're not, you know, I have to measure some doorway or something. But then I've got ongoing things, a week, a month, and a year, and actually have a hidden lifetime list that I hide it from myself on purpose. But it's a list of things that I want to do before I die. And it's, you know, they're things I may not do. And it's not like, go to Rome, stuff like that. It's like, I want to create this thing. I want to learn this thing. I want to be proficient here. So I've got those, but then I've got things that need to be accomplished in those other categories before the year is over, before the month is over, before the week is over. And those things can slide up as, you know, when I get to December, everything that's in that year is going to end up in the month. And the last week of December, everything that's in the month is going to end up in the year. And I pull those things over to move them up in priority. And it's just the same as having it on paper. It's just the same as putting things in order. But having these like kind of buckets of priority, that helps me, especially the urgent one. It helps me look at that first thing every morning and be like, oh, yes, I have to send that thing to that guy, you know. So, like, there's a lot of ways people can do stuff like that to kind of take those weights off your shoulder, put them somewhere else in a way that you can go back and attack them in a timely manner. But, Jimmy, you had an idea for a topic which is kind of related to all this. You want to take that?
Yeah, my experience this week with making that sculpted stool, I asked you guys how much thinking versus how much doing. And the stool, I had the project approved, and I was going to make it for last month, and then the people over at Double H asked me to push it up a month because they had another person making something, and they didn't want them to compete with each other as far as social media goes. And I said, no problem. It gave me more time to think and avoid, which is what I used that time for.
Think and avoid.
I remember once when I first got to the School of Visual Arts, I went in the lecture. Richard Wilde was the chairperson, and he spoke to all of us freshmen, and he says, as artists, one thing we always do is we try to avoid the task at hand for as long as possible. He goes, we will dilly-dally around and avoid everything until the very last moment, until all the inspiration and all the worry and fear has all boiled over and you got no more time to avoid it. And I think of that all the time because he was so right on the money, and obviously I grew into that. I didn't know that at the time. But how much thinking versus doing? And I say this all the time, that there's always one thing that could keep you from starting a project, that fear of getting started. There's always one thing, and it's maybe you're not great at making a CNC path, or you're not good at, with me, it's always the fourth axis, you know, working with the rotational part. That's always keeps me from doing that, because I always think of like, oh, I want to make a gun stock, or I want to make a totem pole, and then I like, oh, but then I got to deal with the fourth axis, let me just do something else. And then I still think about it. And when it came to making this stool, the reason I wasn't starting, and the reason I just kept thinking and thinking and thinking and trying to re-engineer it, the best way to do it would be to use this giant chunk of walnut that I had that was 5 inches thick by 15 inches by 8 feet. And I couldn't possibly waste that beautiful piece of wood for this project, because this project isn't as important as I think it is to start. I got to wait for like to make a pair of wooden shoes for a king. That's what I need to hold that, you know. Every project that you get is not important enough to dig into that material. me and Derek had this conversation recently. Like, we saved these things for this particular, and then you get a great project and you look at it, you go, this isn't the important project. This isn't important enough to dig into this piece of material. So I'm going to scrap together 400 other pieces of scrap and make it more difficult for me and add an extra 7 days worth of work and glue drying time. It got down to the point where I was thinking, okay, if I don't use this giant profile of walnut that I have, what can I use? And then I can go to the store, I can buy 8-quarter rough cut walnut from the sawmill, then I have to surface it and then glue 7 pieces together and then let that drying time and get glue on everything. I honestly think about, whenever I got to glue something up, I think about, okay, it's going to get on my hands. It'll get in my eyebrows for sure. It's going to get on the table for sure. It's going to be on my feet.
Eyebrows.
I'm just joking. But I literally stop myself from gluing things sometimes because it's going to be on my fingertips. It's going to be here. Like, you know, I like to just use my hands. I don't like to use a paintbrush. I don't want to waste a paintbrush. All these little things go into gluing something together. So I was like, I could use that piece of wood, or I can glue up, but I hate gluing up, but I could use a piece of wood, but this project isn't important enough. This is what's been going on in my head. And then I said, blanket, and I went to the shop. Blankets and bleep. I went to the shop, and I pulled out this piece of wood, which was also buried, so that was another part of it. It's like I had to move some things to get it out. It was buried behind a bunch of storage. I pulled this piece out, and I looked at it, and I was like, okay, first step. I basically pulled the mummy out of the tomb, and now the mummy's like in the back of my truck. I'm like, okay, now I have to bring it to my shop, and I just stared at it for 2 days. It was like the monolith from 2000, Space Odyssey, and that's in my shop, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, I have to actually cut this to get into this. The legs that I want to make are in there somewhere. So I vaguely drew them on there. This will all be in the video. And then I'm like, all right, now I have to chainsaw this piece of wood. I need to cut off 30 inches of this. This is like sacrilegious. Like, the wood's going to cry when I cut it because it's like, thought it was going to be a pair of shoes for a king. It's just going to be a stool for a showroom in Texas. I'm sorry. So I finally dug into it. And then I had the stool legs. I got what I needed out of it. And then I'm like, oh, I got to cut another 15 inches off it to make the stretchers, which is the horizontal parts of the stool. I'm like, sorry, I like looked at this piece of wood. I was like, I'm sorry, I got to take another piece of you. And I cut that off and made that. And then I'm like, I could definitely use something else for the seat. I don't need to cut into this giant chunk of wood again. Still had about half of it left. And I was looking at everyone. I'm like, I'm sorry, I have to take another 15 inches off of you. And I went at it with the chainsaw and I cut another 15 inches off. But the whole time I'm feeling guilty about digging into this piece of wood, because in my mind, I'm like, this project isn't important enough for this piece of wood. This, you know, I'm not going to honor the life of this tree with this project. But in actuality, it really is. I learned so much. I'm really proud of the piece that I made. So getting over that fear, how much thinking is really thinking, how much thinking is really fear. And, you know, Dave, you're nodding your head a lot. What, anytime I talk about cutting into this piece of wood and hearing it cry.
Oh my gosh,
and saying,
I got so many examples of that. Ugh.
Don't waste my life on something useless. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'll let you guys talk.
It's the wide boards. Like, I have a piece of walnut that's like 13 inches wide. And
yeah, they call those, by the way, I've been told this because my house has wide plank floors upstairs. There are certain parts of my upstairs flooring that are 24 inches wide. And the guy I bought the house from, he was a little bit of a historian. He said, those are called the king's planks because the widest planks from like the sawmills were always saved for like King's projects.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know how true that is, but that's what somebody told me. Maybe the audience can look that up, but go ahead.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, like, it would be so easy for me to use this wide board for this project, but I only need 4-inch wide boards. So I'm going to save it, and then it's going to get buried in the pile of wood, and I'm going to go get more wood. And then when I finish that project, because I got more wood, I now have more scraps, and it's just piling on top, and I have it drives me nuts. And every once in a while I'll just be like, you know what, we're just going to use this. I'll find another wide board sometime. And then
you might never, though. You just might never.
And that's the risk.
Trees
that
are done,
take.
Man, there's like no more trees.
Yeah.
So do you think
I must say, Rob Rojas, who works with me, he's like, you're not going to cut that board up for this, are you? He even said it to me, even though I was going through it internally. He's like, that's like meant to be a whatever, a so I forget the type of workbench, like a fancy workbench. And I'm like, I don't care about that. I'm not going to make a fancy workbench. I'm no wood whisperer. I make everything. I don't make just wood stuff. I'm not going to make a fancy workbench with a screw on the end. I don't care about that. Anyway, so that's why. Go ahead.
Both of those examples are, you know, like an unusual piece of wood. I mean, that's an outlier to have I don't know how wide you said that was, 15 by 5 or something like that. Like, that's an outlier. You don't get that very often. Yeah. So are both of those examples just material scarcity? Is that the thing that actually stops you because you know that you're not going to run into another one of those?
I don't think it's that as much as you want to honor this piece of material. You know, you can always get it, right? I know I can always go to a sawmill or just go online and ask for somebody who has a sawmill to get me that piece. It's certainly easy enough to replace that. But I think it's, you want to make sure that you're making the right choice. You want to make sure that you're honoring this piece of material, that you're going to give it a new life that's going to be worth the time and effort and the sacrifice you're making by, you know, it was anthropomorphizing this piece of wood as if it's like a soul or if it's a person. Yeah. And I'm taking this piece of wood and I'm making sure that it's donating its life for a good cause and that I'm going to make it proud. I think that's part of it.
It's both for me. So it's like my grandfather's friend who had a huge woods, and him and his son-in-law would cut down these trees and then mill them up and then sell it to friends and family. And I got a bunch of like really cheap, absolutely beautiful air-dried wood. And then this guy passed away a couple of years ago. So those pieces of wood, they have... It's a little extra special because air-dried walnut looks a little bit different than kiln-dried walnut because a lot of the kiln-dried is steamed, so you get more yield. The steaming process takes the dark areas of the walnut and moves it over into the sapwood. And there's a slight difference in look. And so this air-dried stuff, it's a little bit more special for me because it came from this person I'm not going to get any more wood from this person because he passed away. And there's a scarcity of that because I'm not going to get any more. Like, I'll check Craigslist all the time for, you know, somebody.
Yeah, big places, yeah. Big pieces.
And then there is this person, when he was alive, I was buying some wood from him, and he's like, oh, you're going to love this. I have this piece of some sort of pine, but there was, when this tree was growing, it had a chain wrapped around it. So there's this weird growth in the middle of the tree where it was kind of deformed.
Hourglass?
Yeah. And he's like, he gave it to me. It's like a 8-foot long slab with this weird shape in the middle. And you could tell it was this. There was a chain around this tree, and he's like, "I'm just going to give you this. Make something cool with it and show me." And I was like, "Okay, that was so nice of you." And then he passed away like a year later, and now I'm like, "Okay, I still have to make that thing cool to honor this person that gave me this wood."
Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
I don't know when I'm going to do that cool thing. You know, like really
it's good. It's hard to plan to do cool things. But.
Yeah. And really good pine is hard to find around here. Like, of course, you can go to the Home Depot or whatever and get crap, but really good, beautiful pine is very hard to find around here.
That's why you got to ask yourself, is it, I have a giant piece of, is it monkey paw, I think, or monkey paw? I think I'm saying it right. From Costa Rica. Costa Rica sawmill gave me this piece. It's called the Costa Rica Mills. Very, very sweet guy that runs that. And he sent it to me. It came through, I think, the Carolinas on its way up to me. It's stored at the Carolinas, and then it comes to whoever buys it. Anyway, I got this giant slab of wood, and I can cut it up and make it into like a sideboard or something, or sideboard or a table, several small tables. But the best way to honor it is literally clean it, maybe fill the crack in it, maybe not, maybe put a bow tie in it, maybe not, and just put it on a stand. And it's like, what else am I going to do with it? I can mill it up and turn it into a bunch of little tiny toilet paper holders for a million people, but that won't honor this beautiful piece of nature the way just trimming it, cleaning it, sanding it, and giving it a nice finish, and then using it as a work table, which my plan is to take this giant piece. It's 8 feet by 50 inches wide. No, it's eight by somewhere around 8 by 4 feet. I'm going to square it up, clean it, and just use it as my leatherwork studio table. I don't know what else to do with it. I could split it in half and make two skinny tables out of it. I mean, it doesn't seem sacrilegious to cut it up. Outside of just cleaning the edge, because it doesn't quite have a natural edge on it. It's been cut out of almost like a crotch of a tree, so it doesn't have a live edge on either side. Like neither of the two sides have a continuous live edge. It's like get interrupted by the milling process. So I'm just going to cut off what little bit of live edge there is and square it. And there's a big fissure down the middle. I'll leave it just because it looks pretty. I don't even know if I'll fill it with epoxy. I might just leave it open to the air, because what difference does it make?
You know, I do this too. So hear me not trying to sound like I'm better than anybody. I do the same thing with material. But when you objectively think about it, listening to you all talk about it, the objective view of it, it's pretty silly that we do that. Really. You know what I mean? It's like, imagine if you went out and you picked a handful of long grass from your yard and you were like, this is long grass. This grass.
I'm going to save it.
It got to grow longer than all the rest of it, and I got to do something really special with this dead plant.
Weave a little tiny basket out of it.
But at the same time, like, it's weird that we do that, but I have that same feeling of this desk right here is made of teak, and these were the last teak boards I had from getting a whole bunch of teak for a project that a company was paying for, and I didn't have to pay for it. And this was left over, and I kept these boards for like 5 years, just like, it's teak. I got to do something with teak, you know? And I went, I like hemmed and hawed about it for a long time, and finally it was like, well, it's either going to sit there in a stack, or I'm going to do something with it. And I eventually got to where, like, okay, I'll make a desk with it. That is at least something that I will get to use every day. It's not going to be in there on the wall anymore. But, yeah, it's really weird that we feel that way about effectively a dead plant that just, like, there's another one growing in its place right now. You know what I mean?
I think it's the intimidation of looking at, you know, when you buy a brand new journal and you want to make sure the very first thing you write is so important that when they find it, when you're dead for 100 years, that they'll put it in a museum. It's just that blank page. It's really making sure that what you write is potent and important and something you'll be proud of. And it's funny, so Rachel was in my studio the other day. Rachel was in my studio the other day, and she found one of, like, my notebooks have been churning up because Rob is doing a lot of moving things around. And these three or four notebooks from about 10 years ago popped up, and Rachel grabbed one and opened it up, and there was a whole thing written. It must have been sitting on an airplane when I wrote that, because I don't have the time to do that ever. And she started reading. I grabbed the book out. There's nothing salacious in it. I'm just embarrassed hearing my words read back to me about creativity. It might have been something I wrote for my students to read to my students, but I grabbed it. I'm like, don't read that. I'm so embarrassed having to hear this back. And that's, you don't want to, like, take a piece of paper and put something you're going to regret on it.
Yeah.
I have this little, it's like a dotted journal that I use. And the point of it was to just draw something every day, like a piece of furniture or something do something every day. And I was doing pretty good for a couple months. It's been a couple weeks since I've actually put an entry in there. But the first page, I did not like what was on the first page. I tore out the first page. So, and then the entries past that are actually much better. So it just bothered me that the first page of the sketchbook was not up to my standards. So I got rid of it. And I don't know if it was for me or if it's for somebody else who comes across it, but I just didn't like it.
I mean, yeah, we do that. We edit ourselves all the time.
Right.
Constantly. That's just another way to do it. So talking about this, the whole idea of, like, not knowing or putting off something and not starting it until you've got the right idea. I think the way that I find myself doing this more than the material side of things, which I absolutely have done, but I think I do it from do I have all the problems solved yet? I noticed when I was or it there's a threshold. And I think this is an interesting thing. There's a threshold that each of us have with problem solving. And it's about, for me, the struggle is how many of the solutions do I have to have solved before I actually start? And
yeah, that's one thing.
Believing
I was talking
about. That the last 20% I can figure out in the moment, or the last 50% I can figure out in the moment, or what is that like threshold where I'm like, okay, I've got enough to go. And I felt this doing the building this room, because you know, when I thought about it, like from blue sky, kind of, oh yeah, I'm just gonna. It's a room already. I don't have to build anything structural. I'm just going to put up two walls and use the two existing walls. So I'm going to put up two walls. There's going to be a door in it. I have to run some electrical around so that I have plugs, put lights in the ceiling, drop ceiling. I've done that before. Sounds easy enough, right? And that was my threshold of, yeah, that's pretty good. Let's go start building some walls. Like, what a dumb thing to do, because there are so many minute problems, none of which are that hard to solve, but there are so many little decisions that have to be made to actually do all of those things. Mm-hmm. And so I just went and bought a bunch of 2x3s. I'm like, yeah, I'll make the wall out of 2x3s, so it'll be cheaper, it won't take up as much room. Cool. So I go and I frame up these walls, and then I look at the wall and I'm like, wait a minute, I bought a pre-hung door which is made for a 2x4 wall, but now I have a 2x3 wall. Because I was like, ah, it's like hanging a pre-hung door. It's no big deal. You just put some screws in and you're good. Dang it, you know? And then, like, I framed it up without thinking about the fact that it has to interact with a concrete wall on this side and, you know, these metal posts on this side, which is going to change where the top of the thing lies, and that's going to affect where the drop ceiling lies, because they have to be in line with each other. It's like downstream decisions that you can't make until you've put something in place. But I didn't even see any of those. I was thinking about the big, broad, wide choices to be made, rather than like doing that, writing those down, and then going, okay, if I do that one, what will that cause? And I do this a lot. I do a lot of, here's some decisions. If I make those decisions, what will that cause? What will those cause? What will those cause? Yeah. And I went a couple of levels in on them, but I realized after I got into it that I did not go far enough. So I think I jumped the gun a little bit on that one. I think I got ahead of myself and did not think as far into it. And the opposite is totally true, probably more often, where I overthink it, where I think so far down into those rabbit holes and into the minutiae that I'm making choices and trying to solve problems that probably won't even be there in the end. You know what I mean? I think and think and think and think. And a lot of that stuff, kind of like the example of the thing on your shoulder, they're not really that big of a deal when you get to them. But if you overthink them ahead of time, then you're turning them into a big deal. Yeah. So I think for me, the bigger hang up is like figuring out, per project, per day, per year of my life, where is my threshold for I've got enough information to take a step? And am I comfortable with taking a step not necessarily knowing what the next step's going to be yet? I think in general I'm pretty comfortable with that.
Yeah, that's what I was describing before we started, how you think and think and think and think on a project, and you think, okay, I have 75% of it solved, the hardest parts. You know, that's the one thing you kind of chew over the most, is the hardest parts, or the logistics, or the physicality of picking up something heavy and moving it through a machine, all that stuff. You start thinking all that through, and you're like, okay, I got all these hurdles solved. The other hurdles will come to me while I'm in the process. And I say it before and I'll say it again, the breakthroughs happen when you're in the work. So the small breakthroughs happen while you're in the work. You can't solve every problem. There comes a point where you just have to go, let's get started. And whatever happens, happens. I even said it on my Patreon post. I was very nervous to start on this project, and when I finally did, I just let my instinct and my experience run the ship. I made some conscious decisions on the surface, but I let with a lot of experience, sometimes these decisions come to you, and it's almost unconscious. You don't even make the conscious decision. It just comes. And that just comes also with just muscle memory and practice.
I think one of the things that I struggle with is I feel like every new project should be better than the last. And
well, that's funny. I don't really have that.
Yeah.
But I can get it.
It's because
yeah, you got to keep leveling up every time you do something.
Yeah, new. And it's because there's a place that I want to be when I get, you know, older. I want to be this master craftsman. And so I think, well, to get there, you have to go up every single project. And if that project doesn't have that like
challenge,
it feels like I'm going backwards, and that sets me back a little bit. And I have to get past that. Like, not every project has to be better than the last.
I certainly challenge myself, but I don't think it has to be every project. Every once in a while, like, and I always use the example of me making the casting that bell and the hurdles I learned there. There's always once in a while where I'm like, ugh, I have to do this, otherwise I'm going to be a complete failure. I have to at least try it.
I mean, I think trying to improve every time is that's a noble thing to do, regardless of what the end game is. But I think it's also important to remember that exercise is about making yourself stronger, but you can do the same exercises in repetition to make yourself stronger. And I think creativity is the same way, where like painters can paint the same thing 100 times and it makes them better painters. Not that every one of those paintings is individual and unique and like something new to the world, but it makes them a better painter. It's practice, it's exercise. So I think, you know, you can kind of let yourself off the hook a little bit in that. Not everything has to be, or maybe think about it. Not everything has to be a giant leap forward.
Right.
It doesn't have to be 10% better. It can be 1% better,
yeah,
or something, you know. But, and I think I have a hard time with that because I don't do the same thing on a regular basis, which is a choice. I mean, that's on me, but you know, I'll make something and then I won't make another piece of furniture for a year, 6 months, I don't know. And so it's like I'm kind of starting over, you know, I'm not really leveling up so much as relearning. And that's not the case with everything, but I don't hone in on something enough to like level it up on a regular basis. Whereas, you know, that's you all, I think, both do more of the same things more often than I do.
It's like a few weeks ago, I finished up the stereo stand, which was one of my favorite pieces. But now I also need a set of coasters. It feels like I'm just going backwards. Like this thing that took me 3 weeks to make, now I need to make coasters. And so then I got into this like, well, let's make some really complicated coasters. How can I make this so complicated? And then I think about it and I'm like, do I really need to do that? Can I just cut up some wood and just make some coasters and just enjoy the process?
Well, and you could look at that from what is the thing that you want to level up? Is the thing that you want to level up there, naturally you're saying complexity, because that seems like the thing,
right,
that making it more complex is going to make it better. But what if it's leveling up simplicity? What if it's trying to figure out how to make the simplest beautiful coasters, or yeah, ones that pack away, or that, you know, there's another angle that you can kind of exploit to do this is a challenge without it being just more complex,
right,
just taking longer, just using bigger tools, you know. And at that point you're practicing a different set of skills. It's not a matter of just can I woodwork more, you know, can I sand harder to get better coasters.
It makes me think of like a graphic designer. Like, you might, every once in a while, I follow a lot of graphic design people on Instagram, and every once in a while something comes across that's just so simple but just absolutely brilliant. And I think to myself, I would have made that way more complicated than what it needed to be. And finding that that simple thing is sometimes really, really hard.
I think one of the things, I think you and I've talked about this before too, but with music, one of the biggest struggles I have with writing music is restraint. And I figured this out about myself a long time ago from listening to other bands. I have this tendency, if I'm going to make a rock song, the rock song starts here, and it's like this level of intensity, and then it's going to get bigger, and it's going to swell, and it's going to swell, and then it's going to drop and hit and just freight train to the end.
Right.
And that is so boring to listen to, even though it's fun to play. You know, it's like, but for somebody, that's like, it's just gravity. It's just something getting bigger and heavier and faster, and then it's done. Mm-hmm. But like restraint in music, it takes you right to that swell, and then it pulls you back, mm-hmm. and then it like takes you, and you're almost, and then it comes.
Sounds like a Radiohead song.
So much more interesting. Exactly. They are so good at restraint. Because where I would just take something off the deep end, they're like, let's just put a different song here instead. You know, that they do right. something that's totally out there. But I think that's an interesting challenge to say, instead of just this kind of indulgent, bigger, better, more restraint, can be like, what can I do differently? What can I surprise somebody with? You know, and for me, that's difficult in music, but I think you could apply that to anything. Any other thoughts here? We've been talking for a long time.
No, I think I got everything I needed to say.
Everything forever? Podcast is over? We're done?
Just on this podcast.
Oh, Joe.
Great way to end it.
I was worried about next week. Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters, who are awesome as usual. Big thanks to everybody over there that supports this show, that gives us time to talk about stuff like this. Grateful for that opportunity. So big thanks to Nick Ryan, Corey Wards, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks. That's why I got tripped up, because Albers Woodworks has two S. Anyway, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Maincrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, and Crabtree Creative. They're our top supporters. But there's lots of people over there, like the Clueless Maker, that support us. And we're grateful for all of them. And they all get the after show. I don't know what we're going to talk about in the after show today, but something. We're going to talk in the after show. So if you want to get the after show, if you want to help the show out, go to patreon.com/makingit. Join up over there. Make this show happen. We would appreciate it. Do you guys have anything to recommend this week? You're muted, Jimmy.
I knew that. I'm gonna send you guys. It's somebody I started following several months ago. She's an attractive young lady, but her talents are unbelievable. Her journaling talents. She is probably one of the best sketch artists. I follow on Instagram, and she journals all the time. She's an architect in Scotland. And her last name is Louisa Shmoloke. I don't know how to say it, but I'll send it to you. It's artsy Shmoloke.
Try to type that one out.
Yeah, I'll just send you the screen grab. But look at her journals and look at the incredible detail. And she, the reason I thought about her, Dave, is you mentioned you were going to try and do a drawing every day. And she does these big, it's probably a project she developed in school, but she's doing them now and selling them as art. I'm going to show you guys. You see that? That's a little, there's like a 1-inch square, and every single square has a drawing of that day in it, whatever that day is. So it's a visual diary that she draws every, and then she's been selling these big panels. There's like 50 by 50 inch panels with a grid on them, and every square there's a drawing.
Oh, wow. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So I'll send you guys this. You guys go follow. So I recommend if you have a journal and you're intimidated to draw in a journal, look at this and you'll just throw your journal in the ocean. Because it's so
good. Rip out all the pages.
Yes.
So mine is a YouTube channel called Design Theory. And it's a fairly large channel. Like a lot of videos have over 1 million views. But I wasn't aware. And what caught my attention was this video that he did 7 months ago, and it shows like this insane Japan joinery versus U.S. joinery, which is box joints. And so the thumbnail got my attention. I was like, what's this about? And then it wasn't about woodworking at all. It was just about Western versus Eastern design. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I've been diving in other videos of this channel of like why some designs are impossible to improve. And it's just very well planned, well thought out, long videos about design.
Cool. I've never heard of him before. Mine is several people sent me this because I've talked about on here wanting to do one of those like the sliding storage things where you have like a bunch of storage.
It's like library shelves that stack over left, right. Mm.
Well, the Haxman. You guys ever seen Haxman? He has a pretty cool channel. I'd heard of him, but I'd never seen any of the videos. But he built one of those in his garage the other day. And he used these really cool roller hanger things that I'd never seen before. Now, since then, since talking about that, I've kind of changed my idea a little bit for what I was planning on making. So people were sending it like, oh no, somebody else did your idea already. Not a big deal. And he did a really good job, and it's a really good video of making this compressible storage thing in his garage. And so I wanted to give him a shout out because he did a good job on it. And it's going to force me to push my idea even further in a different direction, which is cool, you know. But anyway, go check him out. Mm-hmm. He did a good job. He used like this Unistrut stuff and then these little bearing roller things that fit up inside of it. Sounds like they're kind of expensive, but they hold a lot of weight.
Is it kind of like a farm door, like a farm hanging farm door kind of thing?
Kind of, but it's inside of a channel. Yeah. So you have this like Unistrut channel with an opening at the bottom, and the trolley kind of fits inside the hooks.
Yeah, that's how like new modern farm doors work, a little bit like that. The old ones have the exterior rolling ones.
Yeah. So. Hmm. Cool. Well, unless you guys got anything else.
That's it.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
There's always going to be more material. There's always going to be more journals, so just dig in.
Yeah.
That was my advice.
Yeah.
It's easier said than done.
Trees grow every day.
Yeah, it is. Certainly is.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Bye. Love you.